So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 15, text number 6 to number 9. So I'll recite 6, 7, 8, and we will recite verse 9 together. So this chapter is entitled The Lord's Pauganda Lila. Okay, verse number 6. Translation. He, that is the Lord, soon became so expert in commenting on the Panchi Tika that he could win victory over all the other students, although he was a neophyte. Purport. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there was a commentary, on grammar named Panchi Tika that was later explained very lucidly by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Text number 7. Translation. In his book, Chaitanya Mangala, which later became Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur very elaborately described the Lord's pastimes of study. Purport. The Chaitanya Bhagavat Adi Lila chapters 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are a good reference for the studious pastimes of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Text number 8. Translation. One day Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell down at the feet of his mother and requested her to give him one thing in charity. Okay, so we have number 9 on the board. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. His mother replied, so Lord Chaitanya's mother replied, my dear son, I will give you whatever you ask. Then the Lord said, my dear mother, please do not eat grains on the Ekadashi day. Purport. From the very beginning of his childhood life, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced a system of observing a fast on the Ekadashi day. In the Bhakti Sandarbha by Srila Jiva Goswami, there is a quotation from the Skanda Purana admonishing that a person who eats grains on Ekadashi becomes a murderer of his mother, father, brother, and spiritual master. Yeah, it's bad, isn't it? Yeah. And even if he is elevated to a Vaikuntha planet, he falls down. On Ekadashi, everything is cooked for Vishnu, including regular grains and dal. But it is enjoined that a Vaishnava should not even take Vishnu prasad on Ekadashi. It is said that a Vaishnava does not accept anything eatable that is not offered to Lord Vishnu. But on Ekadashi, a Vaishnava should not touch even Mahaprasad offered to Vishnu, although such prasad may be kept for being eaten the next day. It is strictly forbidden for one to accept any kind of grain on Ekadashi, even if it is offered to Lord Vishnu. Okay. Magyanitamaranda Siya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadam Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tvam Sijivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kaupatrubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so we begin by requesting the blessings of the Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. so we can speak something that will be pleasing to His divine grace. So this is the Lord's Paul Gandalila, verses 6 through to 9. So in verse 6, it is mentioning how the Lord became expert in the Panjitika. So it's speaking of the Lord's expertise in terms of grammar. In the previous verse, it was speaking about the Lord's education, His very studious nature. And in this particular verse, it says he was able to gain victory over all the other students, interestingly enough, although he was a neophyte. So that means that he was able to learn and understand things very, very, very quickly. And in the purport, Prabhupada is quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, saying there was a commentary on grammar named Panjitika, so the commentary on grammar, and this was later explained very lucidly. So the Lord Himself was able to elaborate on something. This is a very important principle for all of us. I was thinking about the nature of our teachings and what we see, because Prabhupada also in the purport to verse number 9 talks about the Bhaktisandarbha and Jiva Goswami speaking and then quoting from the Skanda Purana and then giving more. So we see this principle of elaboration is there in our tradition. Something is given and then it is expanded upon to gain more insight. What this actually implies is that our knowledge and the teachings of Krishna consciousness are concentrated or incredibly dense. Do you find that sometimes when you're reading Prabhupada's books they seem quite dense? Yeah, there's a reason for that. When you look at Prabhupada's writings superficially, you may consider, well, he could have made it a little bit more light. Yeah, maybe throw in a few more jokes. Yeah, something to make it easy reading. In an age where people are increasingly less interested in deep study, and also we know less interested according to our own tradition in philosophy. That's one of the reasons why the Mahabharata is actually considered a book which is more accessible, because it's all this epic adventure. Right? So it still gives the same teachings, or rather the essential teaching in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, but knowing the mentality of Kali Yuga, knowing that people they want some action adventure, a bit of romance thrown in, then I'll listen. Right? Straight philosophy, what are you talking about? So it is a quality of the genius of our founder Acharya that he's deliberately elaborated upon the teachings in order to make them relevant to the modern man. And at the same time, he has deliberately made his writings very dense. Don't think it's an accident. It's deliberate. Our founder Acharya, in his scope and in his vision, he's not considering just the people at this particular time in human history. Let's take a step back. If you want to create something that's going to last a few years, what kind of, let's say a year, what kind of material do you use? Right? Any ideas? Something that lasts just a year. After a year, if it falls apart, there's no problem. So what kind of material do you use? So plastic, any other idea? What type of material? Sorry? What type of material? Any guesses? Yes. Yeah, something disposable. It doesn't have to last too long. Right? So something, maybe a year, after a while, if it degrades, no problem. But what would you do if you had to create something that's going to last 10,000 years? If you're going to create something that's going to last 10,000 years, it better actually be future-proof. It has to be so dense that knowing what's going to happen between now and 10,000 years, knowing how time tends to try to wear things down and make them decay, you have to create something which is so thick or concentrated that even it will last through the rigors of time. Therefore, the books are written in this way on purpose. Because his prayojana or goal is not to just give something in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s. His goal is to create something that's deliberately meant to last all of these 10,000 years. See, it's deliberately dense. Because it will therefore last the rigors of the Kali Yuga mentality, which could very easily try to water it down, to change it. At the same time, he says you should take this teaching and make it relevant according to a particular audience. First Canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 4, text number 1, purport. Therefore, there is also the family business. And the family business is the elaboration. The family business is taking the jewels that have been given by Prabhupada and package them in such a way that everyone will accept those same jewels right here and right now. This is Desha Kala Patra. So nothing changes. And at the same time, it is presented in a way which is meaningful to modern man. And that is the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and therefore it is also the mission of all of his followers. Now, in this next verse, text number 7, it is explaining in this book, Chaitanya Mangala, which later became Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, very elaborately described the Lord's pastimes of study. So what is the connection between this study and what we go on to hear about, which is about the Lord requesting Sachimata to fast on Ekadashi? In other words, he's requesting his mother, "Mother, you please perform this austerity on this particular day." There's a very interesting quote that I'd like to read you. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam. Let's see the exact reference. So this is a reference from 3rd Canto, chapter 27, text number 22. And this is a purport by Srila Prabhupada. He said, "It is said that development in Krishna consciousness is exhibited by proportionate material detachment or vairagya. If one does not separate himself from material enjoyment, it is to be understood that he is not advancing in Krishna consciousness. Renunciation in Krishna consciousness is so strong that it cannot be deviated by any attractive illusion. One has to perform devotional service in full tapasya austerity." And then he goes on to say, "One should fast on the two Ekadashi days, which fall on the 11th day of the waxing and waning moon." Let's read the other part of that. "And on the birthdays of Lord Krishna, Lord Ram, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are many such fasting days. Yogena means by controlling the senses and mind. Yoga Indriya Samyams. Yogena implies that one is seriously absorbed in the self and is able by development of knowledge to understand his constitutional position in relation with the super self. In this way, one becomes fixed in devotional service and his faith cannot be shaken by any material allurement." So there's actually a connection between one's ability to study and one's ability to perform tapasya. In the external world, there is a term that they use which is called framing. So when sometimes politicians or others are going to explain something, they will frame it. They will give it a certain context so that when they make their point, it means something different, it feels different, and therefore it is received differently by the individual. So to give an example, because Prabhupada does this also. So Prabhupada was in a class and he was talking about reincarnation. So then someone says, if reincarnation is real, he says, actually, reincarnation, this is nonsense. Right? If it was real, then why can't people remember? So Prabhupada says, who said that? Someone indicated. Prabhupada says, stand up. They stood up. He says, do you remember everything you did when you were 5? And they say, no. He says, does that mean you were never 5? They say, no. Prabhupada says, sit down. In other words, the moment he gives that context, it is very clear that what they're saying is absurd. Because the central point that he's making is that just because you don't remember something, it doesn't mean it didn't happen. There are many things you don't remember, which definitely happened. End of story. So they had this thing called framing, right? So the idea is that when you see something in context, then you're able to understand it differently. In other words, you're able to think about it differently. From that, you're able to feel differently about it. Therefore, you are able to act on that understanding in a different way. Right? That's the point. And what Prabhupada's books do is they frame your entire experience of life. So when one has a spiritual vision, the Shastra Chakshus, then when you think about fasting, it is not the same consideration as it is for a materialistic person. Because for a materialistic person, it's like, what do you guys do for enjoyment? I can't believe it. You don't eat any meat, fish, or eggs, and then you know twice a month. My God, twice a month you can't even have like rice. You know, I can't even have my curry. I mean, what the hell's going on here? You know, and then so on and so forth. You don't drink. You don't drink like why are you smiling? How can you be possibly happy by that? Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitya Guru Parampara Shri Prabhupada Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. So the point here is your austerity feels different by knowledge. That is actually what's going on. Your austerity is experienced in a different way by the quality of your understanding. It is a question of how your consciousness is framed. And the means by which we frame the consciousness is by the deep absorption in the understanding or the vision or perception of Krishna. So the Shastra is the perception of Krishna. It is the perception of Krishna and it is the perception of his devotees. In the same sandarbhas, there is a term given, vyuda pratyaksha, the direct perception of self-realized souls. So sometimes it is explained that the origin of Shastra is Krishna. In other words, in other places it is explained that the Shastra is a direct perception of self-realized souls. One example, bring Brahma Samhita. Right? So Lord Brahma, he is giving these statements of Lord Brahma are his perception. So he is explaining Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sava Karana Karanam. This is his direct perception. He can understand this is the Supreme Lord. And this Supreme Lord Krishna, he is the supreme cause of all causes. So if we want to have an acceleration in spiritual life, it is all about how we see, how we perceive the world. Prabhupada will sometimes say that everyone sees the world according to their fund of knowledge. And he therefore then describes how the materialist has a poor fund of knowledge. Therefore, they may knowingly drink poison, because the same poison, without that proper framing, is seen as nectar. And for the devotee, that thing that the materialistic person sees as nectar, that same thing is now perceived as poison. The difference for the devotee being that what we have is a direct understanding of reality, whereas everyone else has the illusory idea of what something is. So that's the point. It is a difference of understanding based upon perception. In the next verse, text number 8, very interesting the way that Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is requesting something of his mother. And this is also etiquette. But the etiquette of the Vaishnava has an entire depth of psychology behind it. One day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell down at the feet of his mother and requested her to give him one thing in charity. So, who is the first guru? For any living entity, when they come into the world, who's the first guru? The mother's the first guru. The mother is the first guru. The first thing he does is he falls down at his mother's lotus feet. Having fallen down at her lotus feet, he's not demanding anything. The next thing he does is he's making a request. Think about this point. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Every single living entity, without exception, is his part and parcel. At the same time, he's come as Bhakta Avatar. He's come in the mood of a devotee, and he's coming to exemplify how the devotee is to act. Therefore, he's perfectly cultured, perfectly respectful, and he is perfectly able to even submit himself even before his parts and parcels. He's experiencing the rasa of relationship. Interesting, this word rasa, Prabhupada sometimes translates it as taste, sometimes translates it as relationship. But Ruben, you know, came in, and I remember we had a conversation quite a while ago, and he shared a very nice point with me. And that point was that in a traditional Vedic or spiritual society, spiritually centered society, the personality of the child would be very different to what we see now. It would be much more full. Why? Because in a more spiritually centered community, you would have all the different relationships. So there wouldn't just be the mother and father, perhaps the siblings, but you'd have the aunts and the uncles, the grandparents, sometimes more than a few generations. And so all of them would bring their unique flavor of affection upon that particular child. And what that would do is bring out the various nuances to the personality of that child. And so the child would be very rounded, and that would also come from the very different flavors that come with the different loving dealings. Right? And we see Prabhupada will sometimes talk about this. He explains how the grandfather is even more merciful than the father. So he explains that as a guru, he may be very strict, right? But Bhaktisiddhanta, well, they're trying. Okay? They're trying. So he may give that mercy that the grandfather gives. Because you're not directly his child, right? You're his son or daughter's child. So he's even more kind and merciful. So there are different flavors that come in that relationship. And actually, it's very interesting also that of the two standards, whether in other words, of the category of being a senior or the category of being a junior, which do you think is more powerful? Being in the junior position or in the senior position? Which do you think? And why? What do you think? Don't be scared to answer. Which do you think is more powerful? Being in the junior position or the senior position? Exactly. Yeah. It is actually a superior position to be on the receiving side. Right? It is actually a superior position to be in the submissive position. Because if you are submissive, not just externally, but actually in proper consciousness, you receive everything that has come from those above you. And that is actually, interestingly enough, directly opposed to the mentality of the living entity in the material world who wants to be the superior. So therefore, from the transcendental position, it is seen as a type of insanity. It is seen as a type of insanity. Because you always receive more if you are submissive. In the proper way, in the proper relationship, in the proper context. Of course, the one thing to point out there is that that means that the seniors also have to be proper. But what happens in the, and you see this here, is, and you think about this in your own nature. If someone junior to you comes in a very sincere and submissive mood, what does that inspire within your heart? Honestly. Compassion. So there is a natural psychology interwoven in the Vaishnava dealings. In fact, it is the original psychology, because the original nature of the Vaishnava dealings were to deal with everyone in such a way that whoever you deal with, they cannot help but to be pleased with you and to flood you with their blessings, which is going to quickly take you back home, back to Godhead. You understand? Jiva Goswami also explains in one place, interesting, similar to this dealing, about how in the Vedic society there were such cultured dealings between the children and the parents. Why? It was to cultivate within the heart of that child a very natural, loving respect and submissiveness to authority. Why? Because it was understood that at a later time, that same child will meet their guru. And by them cultivating a natural, submissive, loving deference to authority, when they meet their guru, that same psychology towards authority will already be there, which will facilitate them surrendering to their guru, which will facilitate them going back home, back to Godhead, that much faster. Everything has a purpose. Nothing is superfluous. And that culture is increasingly lost. So when you lose culture, real culture, I'm not talking about people who have externally some opulence and therefore feel that they're better than other people. But when you have real culture, you have real relationship. When you have real relationship, then you have real community. When you have real community, then everyone can go back home, back to Godhead far more quickly with much less effort, because every individual devotee is riding off the wind of the blessings of the entire community. There's a difference between having a group of individuals all coming together externally and having a spiritual community. The two things are not the same. On the one hand, you can have community in name only, where each and every person is pretty damn selfish. And they're coming together to see what they can steal from each other. So it's not really a community. It is pseudo-community. Because there's no real communion. There's no real communication. And there is no real sense of common values and really being my brother's or sister's keeper. But if you want to have real community, it requires something deeper. And the Krishna consciousness movement is meant for that spiritual sangha. Because by spiritual sangha, many, many subtle things happen. There is such a thing, it's called the Anahata Chakra, which is the heart chakra. Every time that you genuinely, and it's not in not lip service, but every time you genuinely appreciate the qualities of another Vaishnava, a certain degree of that same quality that you appreciate develops within your own consciousness. But the opposite is also true. Every time you think negatively about another person, you burden yourself with some of their negative karma. Yeah, that's also explained in the Mahabharata. That when you criticize another Vaishnava, a degree of that of the sinful karma of that particular person enters into your own life. So there is a science to everything. So when Prabhupada says don't criticize, it's not just a nice idea. He's saying that for your own benefit. Right? And at the same time it's balanced, because in Bhagavad Gita, I think it's the third chapter, Prabhupada says to call a thief is not considered an offense. Right? So at the same time, no one can misuse that. Oh, you know, I've done something wrong, but you shouldn't say anything because you're criticizing me and you're going to get my sinful karma. No, you stole my money. Give it back. Okay? So it has to be understood with depth. Everything has to be understood with some real depth. And everything is balanced and integrated as one comes to a higher realization. So Lord Chaitanya, in this verse number 8, he shows this deferential etiquette. He falls down at his mother's feet. That means he's displaying the internal humility that is always within his consciousness. So then the question becomes, what happens if you don't have this humility in your consciousness? The answer is that the mind and body are linked. So if you don't feel it, do it anyway. If you do it, you're going to feel it eventually. But the aspiration has to be there. And where does that come from? How does that work? Why is it that by doing it, I will feel it eventually? Because in the pure state, that's exactly how you do feel. In other words, the soul has a natural sense of humility. The false ego doesn't. So even though I don't feel to be humble, I still act in a humble way and I aspire for humility, and eventually it will invoke my natural humility at the platform of the soul. Because that is how I actually am, and to the extent that I'm not acting that way, it is the extent to which I still have the diseased barrier of my false ego. Because to be puffed up is unnatural. To be puffed up is actually unnatural. It means someone is out of touch with reality. So we were in Radhadesh recently, so they have a kirtan course every year. So we were exploring the third verse of Shikshashtakam in relation to this principle of humility and how it actually works and what it really means. Because in the name of humility, you often see aspiring devotees, practicing devotees, literally displaying either false humility, so you get the kind of, you know, external meekness, Oh Prabhu, please kick me. I'm so fallen, Prabhu. But the moment that person doesn't get Mahaprasadam, there's a riot, okay? Which means it wasn't quite what it seemed to be. Real humility in the spiritual sense means to put Krishna's agenda in the center. Real humility, Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita, in one place translates, he says, humility means truthfulness. So when Prabhupada is asked by one of his disciples, Prabhupada, how can we become humble? When he replies, just become bold for Krishna, it makes complete sense. There's no contradiction. Because the point is, it's for Krishna. When it's Krishna in the center and you're thinking, what does Krishna want? And you do that, that is your humility. And the extent to which we stray from that, that is your false ego, false pride. So there are two ways of playing God. One way of playing God is through low self-esteem. I'm so fallen, nothing works for me, no one likes me, the devotees don't talk to me nicely. It's all me, 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 me. It's all false ego. Even though it may seem to be something else, the trouble is it's all self-centered. Where's Krishna? And real humility is, what does Krishna want? What does Krishna like? How can I think, feel, and act in the way that Krishna is pleased? Now, the reason why there's a confusion between the two is because when you read the prayers of the Acharyas, right? So we have Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1335. Na prema shravanadi bhakti apiva. Rupa Goswami is explaining, I don't have love of Godhead. He will go on to explain, I'm not even interested in the process. I don't have a taste for the process of hearing and chanting. I'm not from a high birth. I do not have knowledge. I don't even have any of the mystic abilities. Right? So the first part of it, you read that, you think, well, yeah, I don't have this. I don't have that. You know, maybe me and Rupa, maybe we're kind of on a similar wavelength here, right? No, wrong. He says, but because you, dear Lord, give your mercy to the most fallen, I have this unbreakable hope which is always in my heart. This hope is always giving me pain. The reason why great Vaishnavas feel small and feel insignificant is distinctly because of their awareness of Krishna. It is like someone who has a candle and then they come before the sun. Right? The candle becomes insignificant in the presence of the sun. Does that make sense? So it is in contrast to Krishna's presence that they feel small. So if someone just feels small and there's no sense of Krishna's greatness, that's false. Look, that's low self-esteem. And what that does is it creates a tamasic mentality. Because you feel you can't do anything, therefore you don't try. That's low self-esteem. It's tamasic. So everything has its symptom, right? And you can understand this is low self-esteem because I'm just disinfused, demotivated, discouraged. Nothing happens for me. Nothing ever works out for me. Oh, this Krishna consciousness is too difficult. Oh, right? It's not the same as what you hear from the Acharyas. Because in the Acharya's writings, either explicitly they will state this, or it's implicit that they are feeling so energized to keep serving because of their awareness of Krishna's greatness. That sense of being insignificant, it is secondary because it is more about them being overwhelmed. My God, just look how beautiful Krishna is. Look how magnanimous he is. Even though I'm so tiny and insignificant, I can't do anything. But he's still interested in me. He still wants me to serve. So that is different. That is spiritual humility. And you can see the symptom of that because it is active. Therefore, one is running more and more towards Krishna. Do you see the difference? Right? So where there's low self-esteem, it's all about us. There's no Krishna in the picture. Where it's spiritual humility, Krishna is very much in the picture. And one feels small in contrast to how great Krishna is. In other words, you are distinctly aware of how amazing Krishna is and how magnanimous and compassionate Krishna is, how much he wants you to come back to him, and therefore you are energized even more to engage in devotional service. So everything has its limiter. If you feel disinspired in Krishna consciousness, don't think that you're developing spiritual humility. You are developing low self-esteem. And if you feel more and more energized, it means you're feeling or understanding, my God, look at Radha Kukulananda. Just look at how beautiful these deities are. And look at how much they tolerate even that fool Buddha Bhavana who's supposed to be giving class. Right? If they can tolerate someone even as low as this person, there's hope for us all. Yeah? That is the mood. So spiritual humility is energizing. Low self-esteem is demotivating. Yeah? Everything has its limiter. So in this verse also, so Lord Chaitanya, having paid his obeisances, he then makes this request. It's not a demand, it's a request. There's a way of dealing. So the person is senior, he's expressed his humility, the person's heart will be naturally open. Now he's going to make a request. Not many requests, just one. Requested her to give him one thing. One thing in charity. That means he's taken the position of a beggar. The same Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Ahamsa Vasya Prabhava Mata Savam Pravatate Iti Matva Bhajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samamvita. That same Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of everything, now he's begging something from his mom. One thing. One thing in charity. One thing in charity. And so, his mother, before he actually makes a request specifically, she says, my dear son, I will give you whatever you ask. She doesn't even know what he's asking for yet. But she said to him, I will give you whatever you ask. That means she's open. So when there's proper dealings, you will automatically always get more. From the transcendental perspective, when the pure devotees look at the behavior of the residents of the material world, they think it's insanity because they think, no, but if you do it the other way, you'd actually get more than if you're doing it this way. Okay? If you're actually more humble, you get much more blessings than trying to push your agenda. Right? If you were actually really understood what Krishna consciousness was, you would gain far more than if you just tried to lord it over the material nature. So they think, these guys are crazy. Right? How are we going to help them? These guys have absolutely no sense of what's going on. No conception of what's going on. Right? It's almost like they'll look at it that these people think they're happy by drinking poison. They're crazy. What is going on here? How are we going to help these mad men and mad women to understand? Put the poison down. We've got something else for you, something much greater. So it's literally a way of reforming the mentality. Huh? But we have to engage in that process. We have to move in that same direction. We have to move in that same direction by helping ourselves. It is being given, but we have to also help ourselves by taking what's being given in the right way. And then Lord Chaitanya now requests, my dear mother, please do not eat grains on the Ekadashi day. So in the Padma Purana, I think there's a 14th chapter there. In the 14th chapter, there's a personality called Papa Purush. And he makes that request to Lord Vishnu, who allows him to take shelter of grains on Ekadashi. Right? Because people, fasting and such, he was actually decaying. So he actually asked Lord Vishnu, where can I take shelter? Okay, you can take shelter in grains on Ekadashi. Interestingly enough, when Prabhupada speaks about why we fast, it's a very interesting way that he speaks about it. He says, actually, let's just find this. So this is Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 28, text number 35 to 36 in the purple. He says about Ekadashi and fasting and austerity. He says, all of these are meant to decrease the fat within the body so that one will not sleep more than desired and will not become inactive and lazy. Then he goes on to say, overindulgence in food will cause a man to sleep more than required. Interesting, isn't it? He gives many reasons for Ekadashi, but that's one of them, to decrease the fat within the body so one will not sleep more than is required. The primary reason for Ekadashi is to increase our hearing and chanting, to increase our service, our love for Krishna. But there is also this thing about actually helping us to differentiate our awareness and our consciousness from the bodily platform. So some austerity, something that helps to remind us, actually, you know what? I'm not this body. I have this as a concept. But if I'm going to actually realize it, I need to put that into practice. And this bhakti yoga, this Ekadashi Vrat, this is one way. One way. Now, it's also very interesting. It is understood that whatever you eat, it's more general. When you eat food, a certain quality of the food is transformed into your physical body, but a certain quality of the food is transformed into your subtle body. Right? This is mentioned in Ayurveda also. So the consciousness with which someone is cooking the food is going into your consciousness. Their mind is becoming your mind. Yeah? And that includes those desires and things that happen. So when you eat something that has been cooked by someone with a sinful mentality, you're actually making your own progress in spiritual life more difficult. Because some of that sinful consciousness is actually becoming part of your mind. That is why we're careful about what we eat. We're careful about who it's cooked by. Because you are either helping yourself to make spiritual progress, or you are actually hindering your own spiritual progress. That's in the more general sense. But with Ekadashi, as we said, we want to do even more. We want to focus on how we can glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead and take the time out to do that. A question for you. When you're fasting on Ekadashi, is it difficult? Yes, no? Yes? Yeah. It can be difficult for many people. There's a more subtle point to this. The living entity is anandamaya. So we are pleasure-seeking by nature. Everything in terms of the austerities of spiritual life becomes easier as you gain a taste for spiritual life. Because you're going to need a taste from something. So if we don't have a higher taste, then all you think about, all the Ekadashi, my God, there's no pizza. No pizza, no pizza. I mean, how long do we have to fast for, right? You check your text messages for when you can break the fast the next day, right? Because the mind's actually just thinking, I can't eat this. Oh no, I can't eat that. I'd like that, but it may have grains in it. Oh dear, right? Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Why is Krishna consciousness so difficult? So the real solution is actually to really work on gaining a higher taste. And Krishna makes it very easy because there are different levels in which that taste can take place. So we talk about paramdrisva nivartate. Even a neophyte devotee can gain a higher taste because you find those ways of Krishna consciousness, those activities in Krishna consciousness that you relish. Don't be confused by the teachings. Your duty is to relish your devotional life. Right? We say we are not the enjoyers. We are the enjoyed. That is correct. But you better make sure you find a higher taste in devotional life. Because if the soul is not is constitutionally bliss, you know, pleasure seeking by nature, and if you do not relish your devotional life, you may have a tendency to look for that kind of taste in the material energy. So you are protecting yourself from trying to enjoy the material nature by relishing the devotional activities of service to Krishna. Okay? You have to understand that. It is the constitutional nature and position of the soul to relish. But what that means is we want to serve. And we want to arrange our devotional life in such a way that we are always infused, energized, and inspired. Don't think it's the duty of anyone else to bring you back home, back to Godhead. Right? Sometimes, you know, there's this scene where someone is on a mountain and then there's a helicopter trying to get them and someone will drop a ladder down. Right? That ladder that comes down is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and each and every devotee who's aligned with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because mercy flows through the conduit of the Vaishnava Sangha. But you have to accept the mercy. Right? No one can force you to accept the mercy. The mercy is presented before the devotee, but you have to accept it. So you should consider that it is my responsibility. It is my responsibility to keep myself inspired and infused in this mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Don't look around and expect anyone else to do it for you. Right? Take it, whatever mercy is given, take it. But be very eager and be responsible. It is an immature mentality who's expecting someone else to work a miracle for you in spiritual life. And we see that also. Oh, you know, Guru Maharaj didn't smile at me today. Right? No, seriously, he didn't smile at me, you know? Maybe he's not a Paramahamsa after all. Right? It's not the point. Technically speaking, it's not his job to smile at you. Technically speaking, it's his job to correct you. Right? So we have to try and change his mentality, and it's difficult, and if we're very kanishta, then you see it's pervasive because everyone has that mentality. Oh, did you say Guru Maharaj smiled at me? Oh, he smiled at me for 2 seconds longer than he smiled at you. You know? Maybe I'm going to go back to Kota just that bit quicker than you are. Right? It's pervasive, but actually, you need to get out of it. We need to get out of it. It is our duty to keep ourselves inspired and engaged in spiritual life. And it is our duty to the extent that we are meant to use everything as a catalyst for spiritual acceleration. Everything. Seemingly good, seemingly bad. If you really believe that the Supreme Personality of Godhead actually loves you, who here actually believes that? That Radha Gokulananda genuinely love you? Okay. Some hands up, some hands not up. Okay, and I appreciate even the hands that didn't come up, because that's honest, right? That means we recognize, okay, this is where I am, we've got work to do, but I know where I am, it's honest. But if you really believe that Krishna genuinely loves you, that's one part of the equation. Second equation, who here actually believes that Krishna is actually the supreme controller? And as Prabhupada says, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Raise your hands. Okay, so think about what this means. If you believe, first of all, that this person genuinely loves you, that means implicitly he's your well-wisher. And when I say well-wisher, I mean it's not just like, you know, when he's had a good day, then he wants something nice to happen for you, but when he's had a bad day, then things shouldn't come up, right? A genuine well-wisher, there's no envy here. He just wants what's actually best for you. If you believe that, and you believe that he's completely in control, then what does that imply about every single thing that happens in your life? Sorry? Yeah, it's ultimately in your best interest. Right? Even if that means in your best interest indirectly, because you've done something wrong, and now he wants to teach you, okay, this is wrong. How are we going to snap this guy out of it? If you genuinely accept that he's your well-wisher, and he's in control of everything, then every aspect of your existence is your guru. Because every aspect of your existence is trying to help you to go back home, back to God, that if you have enough common sense and enough humility to learn from it. Right? So your guru isn't just when the Diksha Guru comes into the environment. Your guru is every second of your existence, because the real guru is Krishna, the Adi Guru. Sometimes it's explained as Krishna, sometimes as Balaram. And therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is ever present, is ever teaching. We just have to get the point. So try and listen out for that. What is life teaching you? On a day-by-day basis, what is being communicated to you within your life? Directly, indirectly, through the lens of guru, sadhu, shastra. And if we can catch these lessons, you're able to move forward that much faster. Because Krishna often tries to tell us something through hearing first. But because we're so gross in the Kali Yuga, hearing, no. It doesn't really get the point. Right? In Kali Yuga, that's how it is. When things are gross, everyone gets it, right? Someone punches you in the face, okay, maybe he doesn't like me. Right? Just maybe. Maybe he doesn't like me. What makes you think that? Well, black eyes, swelling, maybe. Maybe he doesn't like me, right? But anything less than that, anything subtle, yeah, I'm not really sure. It's because the consciousness in the Kali Yuga is very gross. That's why also, Prabhupada, when he does things, if you look at it, it is the genius of our founder Acharya. He's perfectly understood the mentality of this age. Right? You want to make a temple in India? Okay, we're going to make a temple in India, and we're going to take influences from around the world. And we will make something so big and you know, majestic, that everyone will say, wow, you know, maybe there is a God. Because if you make something which isn't so externally opulent, nah, it's not a big deal. People will overlook it. Right? It has to hit them according to their level of consciousness. And the beauty of Krishna consciousness is that the spiritual energy can manifest in many different ways, from the most gross to the most subtle. Isn't that amazing? Right? So it can be in the grossest manifestation, so a very beautiful, opulent-looking building. It's so gross, but you can touch it, you can see it, you can take a picture, you can even take a selfie. My God. Right? So they can come to the Vedic Planetarium, you know, and do this whole thing and send it back on Facebook, and everyone's like, wow, it's Vedic Planetarium. And they'll come there, and they're not coming there because of God. They're coming there because it's a tourist attraction. Right? It looks good, looks opulent, it's in India, looks big, majestic, looks even a little bit like St. Paul's Cathedral in some respects. Wow. Right? The prasad looks good. There'll even be pizza in the nearby vicinity. Wow. Right? And while they're there, oh, and also I heard something about Krishna while I was there. Right? And this is something we need to be very conscious of. Right? If we don't think about the nature of the people we're dealing with when we're preaching, then technically speaking, you're not even preaching. Right? Or as the term is, as sometimes is used, you're preaching to the choir. Right? You know, so the Mahaprasadam, it's got two hairs in it, but it's transcendental Prabhu. Okay? Right? Try giving that to the queen. So preaching means to understand the nature of who you're dealing with. And it's interesting, because it also relates to the same thing that Lord Chaitanya is displaying here. You can't actually preach if you're not humble. You can't even have relationship if you're not humble. Because without humility, who is in the center? Without real humility, who is in the center? Who? You are. Therefore, there's no question of relationship. For someone who is self-absorbed, there's absolutely no question of real relationship, because all you do is think about yourself, and all you project onto the world is yourself. So even when you're dealing with someone, you're preaching to the choir because you're thinking about what you like, what you need, where you are, and you've forgotten what it's like to look at this movement from the outside in. Remember that. And if you forget to look at what this movement is like from the outside in, then that point of reference to explain Lord Chaitanya's teachings in a way that is relevant to whoever we are dealing with. Prabhupada says this in First Canto of Bhagavatam. He said, this is called realization. This is called realization. So we want to practice this humility. We were giving a seminar on the Brahmapucham, the five levels of consciousness. Anamoy, Pranamoy, Manamoy, there was a Vijnanamoy and Nandamoy. And we were sharing an interesting point, that often you'll see this amongst our preachers, they're preaching to different levels of consciousness. Be under no illusion, we are aspiring for Anandamoy. But that doesn't mean that at every single moment in your existence as an aspiring devotee, that your consciousness is on Anandamoy. Do you see the difference? Right? We may be aspiring for the transcendental platform, right? But when you're chanting and watching TV at the same time, that's not the Anandamoy platform, right? Sorry to burst anyone's bubble. Okay? But that's not chanting on the transcendental platform. So at Anamoy, an individual is concerned about Anna. Prabhupada here, when he translates Anna, grains. Right? Anamoy, it's all about food. Father, give us our daily bread. Sound familiar? Yeah? It's all about what Krishna can do for me. So there's a certain level of consciousness. And you'll see that when an individual, and Prabhupada was so perfect on this, when he would see that an individual culture, society was just all about this, or within a culture, groups who were just about this, what do I get? Main emphasis, give them the holy names, give them prasadam. Because that is a manifestation of the Anandamoy principle, a manifestation of Krishna that's gross enough for them to understand and appreciate. I can appreciate Krishna when he comes in the form of something that's going to fit inside my belly. Right? Then when you come to the Pranamoy platform, right? This is the extended selfishness platform. This relates to passion. So when Prabhupada sees a society such as our society, which is dominated by the mode of passion, make sure that the temples look opulent. Right? Because unless it looks opulent, big, make sure that dignitaries are being spoken to so that they endorse the movement. Well, these prestigious person has endorsed the movement. So that means it must be correct. Because that is what someone at the Pranamoy platform can tune into. It's prestigious, it's big, it's opulent. Hey, it's for us. Right? Yeah. I remember when I got married here, some of my in-laws, you know, the thing that impressed them so much, they look, you know, the donors, you know, the big, it's a big mansion, right? This doctor, that doctor, they're giving money, you know. This is of our caliber. Yes, it must be God, because of, you know, it's opulent, right? And you'll even see that some devotees, they think that they're doing well in Krishna consciousness because they've got money. Yeah, can you believe that? Yeah. I must be blessed by Krishna because my bank balance just got that bit bigger. Of course, it could be Krishna's blessing, but they're seeing it through the level of consciousness. Now, when you come to Manamoy, that's a platform of Dharma. At Manamoy, people do things out of duty. So when sometimes you hear class, Prabhupada expects this. It is our duty to do this. The people in the class who are like, yes, this is it. This is Krishna consciousness. Their consciousness is more tuned to Manamoy. So when you talk about obligations and duties, they're completely bought in. But it's increasingly rare that you see people doing things just because they should do it. For many people, they do things because of what they can gain. Have you ever noticed that? And that also includes the aspiring devotees as well. So we have to be aware of the level of consciousness. Vijnanamoy is a liberated platform. And then Anandamoy is the purely transcendental consciousness. So our duty is to pick people up where they are and bring them to the Anandamoy platform. We have to be very honest in how things are going to progress. And Prabhupada was perfect at this. So there are five levels of consciousness, and even someone who's a practicing devotee aspiring for the Anandamoy, it doesn't mean that at every single moment in time they're acting and fully absorbed on the platform of Anandamoy. Yeah? Even to the point that Prabhupada, if you look at the statement when he speaks about the importance of Varnashram, why? If every devotee is living on the Anandamoy platform, where is the need of Varnashram? They're just absorbed in Krishna. Where is the need for Varnashram? Huh? It is because we're not always absorbed in that. So what he's trying to do, and I'll end on this point, there is the focus and there is the foundation. The foundation is the platform that you stand on. The focus is what you're aiming for. You understand the difference? Don't be fooled. Don't think that because you're aiming for Anandamoy, you're living on Anandamoy. But try to at least live on the platform of goodness while you are aspiring for Vishuddha Sattva. Yeah? It is because as devotees, we often don't even live on the platform of goodness. Therefore, it becomes difficult to aspire for Anandamoy. I'll explain how this works. On the platform of ignorance, it's unsteady. So it's like an archer who has a bow and arrow in the hand, and they're trying to hit this chandelier. But because what you're standing on is unsteady, you can't take aim properly. What you're standing on is unsteady. Your life is unsteady. Therefore, your focus on transcendence also becomes unsteady on the conditioned platform. Same thing of pranamoy. You can even do an analysis of communities according to these five levels of consciousness. A pranamoy community is symptomized by opulence and prestige, but like pranamoy, like passion, externally the packaging is amazing. But when you tear off the packaging, what do you see? Unsteadiness. Because the mode of passion is also unsteady. So again, it's difficult to take aim because of the unsteadiness. The goal is completely steady, but our aim is unsteady because the platform that we're living on is also unsteady. And that is the greatest trick of Maya. Maya means illusion. Everyone says, why is Krishna consciousness so difficult? No, it's completely easy, but what you're standing on is unsteady, so it's difficult for you to take aim. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So there is the form, there is the focus, and there is the foundation. If you can come to transcendence from the platform of goodness, you will be able to take aim in a much more powerful way. And guess what? You're going to be able to hit the target also. Yeah? This is the blind side that we have. The blind side is that we're looking at the goal, but we don't understand what we're living on. And then we think, why is life so different? Why is everything shaking? No, it's the foundation that you're on that's shaking. Okay, I've gone over time, so I'll stop there. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janita Gopramanandi, Hari Hari Bol.